Hello and welcome to another edition of the 13th Hour Podcast. This is episode number 73 and I'm your host Joshua Blum, and happy new year to all you folks. 2017, hopefully it is less crazy than 2016 for all the stuff that's been going on in the world lately, and personally too, for all of you. So today I'm actually doing a little story time reading with my daughter. It's a book called The Water of Life, and the illustrator I've featured many times on this podcast before, Trina Shart Hyman, has illustrated a number of books that we've read on this podcast, including George and the Dragon and Sleeping Beauty and a few others like that. So you can check out past episodes for that. Probably the easiest way, just Google 13th Hour Podcast and Trina Shart Hyman. You'll probably find the episodes, and or you can just go onto the main website and do a search. They're all tagged by her name, the posts and stuff like that that have her illustrations. So today, this is a story called, like I said, The Water of Life. It's another of her fairy tales that she has illustrated. The author is different, Barbara Rogaski. And it's I guess it's a less well-known Grimm's fairy tale story that I remember when I was a kid and liked the story. And I think, like many of these other ones, it's been simplified a fair amount for a children's book, but it works pretty well in this format. And it's something that I remember, I think, probably on some level influencing the way I wrote The 13th Hour, where there was an idea that people have to go on a quest to find the secret to eternal life. And it turns out, of course, in The 13th Hour that it's not quite an actual potion, but I think probably that's where I got some of the idea. I mean, that's a common enough idea anyway, but I suspect a lot of it had to do with stories like this that have a similar kind of retelling, where people go on an adventure, and the story is not so much the finding of it as that the what happens along the way. So that'll be that, and that's in other news. There's I've been working more on the song that I posted last week, called There's a Wild Heart Beating, and I posted the instrumental part to it last week, and I've had to do a lot of editing to it to make the vocals work with it. I kind of hinted at that last week, that I was having a lot of trouble with that, and my brother is actually visiting, and we were actually going through it last night and trying to figure out how to get it to work in certain parts. And so I think I have a partial solution to that, at least. See, it all comes from the fact that when you're playing stuff with like an acoustic guitar, for example, which is where I'm coming from, you can kind of make it work. You don't have to, the timing and the beat of the things doesn't matter as much, but when you're doing it with a drum beat in the back, or when you're doing it in a synthesized form, it does matter. And so there's one particular part when I originally recorded the backing track that kind of messed up the vocals in the very beginning. That was the part I was having so much trouble with. And so I think I figured out a way to work around that. And so I think it'll end up producing two songs rather than one. So we'll see. I'll keep posting, keep plugging away at that over the next couple of weeks and see what it sounds like. But I like what... I like the direction it's going in so far. So that's it for little updates. And other than that, take care. Have a good start to 2017. And I will talk to you guys next week. Okay, this is called The Water of Life. It's retold by Barbara Rogaski, illustrated by Trina Shart Hyman. And this one is from 1986. A tale from the Brothers Grimm. This is dedicated for my sister Muriel from the author, and for Barbara from the illustrator. Once upon a time, there was a king who became so sick that everyone believed he would die. His three sons were very sad. One day they went to the castle gardens, where they wept in sorrow. A little old man came over to see them and asked, "Why are you crying?" They explained that their father was dying of a terrible sickness and that there was no cure. "I know a cure," said the little old man. "It's the water of life. If he drinks it, the king shall be well again. But it is very hard to find." The oldest son said, "I'll find it." He went to his father to ask permission, and the king shook his head weakly. "No," he said, "the danger is too great. I would rather die." The son begged and pleaded, telling his father how much he loved him, but secretly thought, "If I find this water of life and my father is cured, he will leave this kingdom to me when he dies." The king believed his son's love was pure and finally gave his permission. And there's the three brothers there in this picture. And they're all very sad. And there's the king and the first brother. And so there he is. He sets off on his horse on a journey. And the prince set off on his journey. In a little while, he came upon a dwarf who stood in the middle of the road. "Where are you going so fast?" the dwarf asked. The prince, who had to stop his horse, was greatly annoyed. "Stupid runt," he said. "This is no business of yours." And he rode proudly away, his nose in the air. The little man was very angry, and he cursed the king's oldest son. And soon the prince came to a steep-sided ravine between two mountains. There it is right there. As he rode along, the ravine became narrow and narrow until he was barely wide enough for the prince and his horse to pass through. And finally it became so narrow that he got stuck. And no matter how much he pushed or poked or prodded or yelled, the prince and his horse could neither move forward nor backward. So there they stayed, wedged between the walls of the ravine. He got stuck right in between those rocks. Uh-oh. So he got stuck there. So what happens next? So there's just two of the brothers. The king waited a long time for his oldest son to return.
And that boy's sleeping.
That's the king right there. He's on his bed. I don't know if he's sleeping, but he's not feeling well. So the king waited a long time for his oldest son to return, but he did not come back, and the king grew sicker and sicker. One day, his second son came to me and asked permission to look for the water of life. Weaker than ever, the king shook his head. "No," he said, "the danger is too great. I would rather die." "Please, father," his second son said, "let me go out of love for you." But to himself, he was saying, as his brother had said, "If I find this water of life and my father is cured, the kingdom will be mine when he dies." And the king believed his second son's love was pure, and at last he gave his permission. Uh-oh, what happened here? Well, the prince set off, and before long, he too came upon the dwarf standing in the middle of the road. "Where are you going so fast?" the dwarf asked. The prince had stopped his horse. "Idiot, midget," he said, "that's none of your business." And he almost ran over the dwarf in his proud haste to get away. Tiny man, angry again, cursed the king's second son. And the prince came to a steep-sided ravine, and the same thing happened. The farther he rode, the narrower it became, until finally he was stuck fast and could neither move forward nor backward. This is what happens to those who have too much pride. And there he is, stuck. Him and his horse are stuck between the rocks. Well, now there's just one of the guys left. And when the second son did not return, the youngest went to his father and asked his leave to seek the water of life. So weak he could barely speak, the king gave his permission. On his journey, the prince came upon the dwarf, who asked him where he was hurrying so fast. He stopped the horse and explained, "I am searching for the water of life because my father is so sick he is dying." And so the dwarf asked, "Do you know how to find it?" "No," said the prince. "Since you have not been too proud to answer me the way your brothers were," the dwarf said, "I'll tell you where the water of life is and help you find it. There is a fountain in the courtyard of an enchanted castle, and the water of life flows from that. But you will never get in unless you do exactly as I say." So the prince listened carefully. The dwarf said, "Here's an iron rod," that's that thing right there, "and two loaves of bread. Knock on the castle gate three times with a rod, and it will open. In the courtyard, there are two lions with huge gaping jaws. Throw a loaf of bread to each one, and they will calm down and let you pass. And hurry and take the water of life. You must leave with it before the clock strikes 12, or the gate will close and lock you inside." So there's the two loaves of bread. And there's the rod, and here's the prince listening to this guy speak. So the prince thanked him and took the iron rod and two loaves of bread and went on his way. Everything happened as the dwarf had said. The prince knocked three times with an iron rod, and the castle gate flew open. In the courtyard lay two lions with their huge mouths open and their sharp teeth glistening. He threw each a loaf of bread, and they quieted down. The prince walked into the castle, and he came to a big hall where many enchanted princes sat around a long table. Now look, there's all kinds of different princes here. There's like one with a beak. This one is a fairy, I think. This one has antlers coming out of his head. This one has a unicorn horn. This one has something growing out of his head. This one is a frog, and this one has red eyes. And this one has a crown of thistles on his head. And this one is a swan. So, interesting. So many enchanted princes sat around the long table, and they did not move, nor did they speak. The king's youngest son took the rings from each one's fingers and picked up a loaf, or picked up a sword and a loaf of bread that lay near them on the floor. Let's see. Those are the two loaves of bread. He gave them to the two lions. I'm not sure why he took the rings off their fingers, but maybe we'll find out. In the next room, he found the most beautiful princess he'd ever seen and fell in love with her then and there. That's her. That's the princess.
She has no shoes.
She has no shoes. That's right. She's writing in a book. The princess was so happy to see him that she kissed him joyously. "You have set me free," she said. "If you come back to me in a year, we will marry and my kingdom will be yours." Then she told him how to find the hidden courtyard and where the water of life flowed. "But hurry, you must draw the water before the clock strikes 12. And so the prince promised to return in a year's time and went on. So he has to go find. Along the way, he came to a room. He came into a room which held a freshly made bed. It looked so inviting, and he was so tired that he lay down and fell asleep. He might miss the time. He woke with a start as the clock was striking 11:45, meaning that he has 15 minutes. He jumped from the bed in fright and ran into the courtyard of the castle. There stood the fountain, and from it flowed the water of life right then. He quickly filled a cup with the precious liquid, and just as the clock was striking 12, left through the castle gate. On the last stroke, the gate closed with such force it took off a piece of his heel. I'm guessing it's the heel of his shoe, I'm guessing. At the same time, he was happy to have the water of life, and he started homeward to his father. After a while, he met the dwarf again, and he stopped to thank him. When the dwarf saw the sword and the loaf of bread, he said, "The sword and the loaf of bread will be great treasures to you."
I need to go to bed.
Yeah, we'll finish. We're almost done the story. The sword can defeat entire armies, and the loaf of bread will never grow small, no matter how much is taken from it. He got the sword and the loaf of bread from.
She has no shoes.
She has no shoes. He found it in this castle here. I still don't understand why he took the rings, but anyway, maybe that comes out later. I don't remember. But anyway, he gets the sword and the loaf of bread, and they're great treasures. And so the prince did not want to go home to his father without his brothers. "Good dwarf," he said, "do you know where my brothers are? They set out to find the water of life, but they never return." The dwarf said, "They are stuck fast, wedged between two mountains. I curse them because they are so proud." The prince begged the dwarf to release them, and at last the dwarf set them free. But he warned the prince, "Beware of your brothers. They have evil hearts." Nonetheless, the prince was glad to see his brothers again. There's the two of them. They listened closely as he told them about finding the water of life and filling a cup with the liquid to take to their dying father. They bent their heads to hear when he described the beautiful princess and told them of her promise to marry him and make him prince of a great kingdom if he returned in a year's time. So then the three of them rode away together on a long trip home. They came to a land where war and famine raged. Destruction and starvation so afflicted the place that its king believed all was lost. The youngest son went to him and gave him the loaf of bread. With it, the king fed his entire kingdom, and yet the loaf of bread remained whole. The prince then gave them the sword, and with that, the king destroyed invading armies, and peace reigned over the land. The king took back the loaf and the sword, and the three brothers rode on. Twice more on the journey, they came to lands that war and famine had brought nearly to ruin. Famine means hunger. And each time the prince lent the king the loaf of bread and the sword, and each time the people were fed and the kingdom was saved. But the loaf remained whole and the sword did not stop shining.
My.
See right there? There's the bread and there's the sword. In this way, the youngest prince saved three kingdoms and earned the eternal gratitude of those three kings. So the brothers then boarded a ship and sailed across the sea. During the voyage, the two older brothers said to each other, "He has the water of life, and we have nothing. He will save our father's life and inherit the kingdom that shall be ours by birth, and then we will have nothing in the end as well." They burned with anger and yearned for revenge, and together they plotted to destroy their younger brother. And while he slept, they emptied the water of life from his cup and poured it into one of their own, and they filled his cup with bitter seawater. As soon as they arrived home, the youngest son went to his father. He gave him the cup that he believed held the water of life, expecting him to drink from it and become well again. But instead, the king took a sip, spat the bitterness out of his mouth, and grew sicker than before. As he lay in misery, the two older sons came to him and accused their younger brother of trying to poison him. "We have the water of life," they said, and gave their cup to the king. The moment he took one swallow, his sickness began to leave him. Before long, he looked as healthy and strong as he had been in the days of his youth. So, when the two older brothers saw the youngest son, they laughed at him. "You found the water of life, but we took it away from you. You did all the work, and we will get all the reward." Isn't that always the way? "You should have kept your eyes open. We took it from you while you were asleep." "Not only that," they said to him, "in a year, one of us will go to the beautiful princess and claim her. One of us will be the prince of her kingdom, not you." Furthermore, they said, "Do not go to the king, our father, and tell him what you have done, or what we have done, rather. He thinks you have betrayed him, and he will not believe you. Besides that," they said, "if you say one word, we will kill you. If you want to live, you must remain silent." The king, now restored to strength, was furious at his youngest son, who he thought had tried to murder him. So the king called his council together, and they sentenced the youngest prince to be shot in secret. So there's someone who's sent to do the thing. The prince suspected nothing. One day he went hunting, and the king's huntsman was ordered to go with him. When they were deep in the forest, the prince saw that the huntsman looked very sad. "Good huntsman," he said, "what is the matter?" "I must not tell you," the huntsman answered, "and yet I should." "Say whatever it is, I swear I will forgive you," the prince said. "Alas, my prince, I must kill you. The king, your father, has commanded it." Filled with horror, the prince said, "Dear huntsman, do not kill me. Give me my life." "Dear prince, I must kill you," the huntsman said sadly, and he raised his gun. "Wait," the prince said, "stop. Give me your huntsman's clothes and take my royal garments in exchange, and I will escape into the forest." "With gladness," the huntsman said, "I would never have been able to shoot you." And so the huntsman went back home by back roads where no one would see him in the prince's clothes, and the prince wandered deeper into the forest disguised in the simple clothes of the huntsman. And there's, who's that? That's the dwarf from the beginning of the story, right? So sometime after this, the three wagons filled with gold and jewels came to the king for his youngest son. They were sent in gratitude from the three kings whose kingdoms the prince had saved with his sword and his miraculous loaf of bread. "Can my son have been innocent?" the king thought to himself. "Alas, I am sick at heart." Out loud he said, "I wish he were alive. I will never forgive myself for having him killed." At that the huntsman spoke up. "He is still alive. I cannot bring myself to kill him." And he told the king what happened. A weight fell from the king's heart. He immediately sent a proclamation throughout his kingdom saying that his son should come home, where he would be welcomed with happiness and love. In the meantime, the beautiful princess had herself servants build a road made of pure and shining gold that led straight to the king's, straight to her castle gate. And, I think when he came and he found her, broke an enchantment, and everybody else who was frozen is not anymore, I think. She said to her guards, "The man who rides straight up to me, to the center of the road, is the right man, and you are to allow him to enter. But any man who rides to one side or the other of the golden road is not the right man, and you're not to let him in." So there's the first guy riding there. When the year was almost over, the oldest son decided it was time to go to the princess. He expected to pass off as her savior and so claim her and her kingdom for his own. When he saw the golden road gleaming in the sun, he said, "It would be a terrible shame to ride in this road as wonderful as this." And he turned his horse to the side of the path and rode up to the castle along the right side of the golden path. When he reached the castle, the guard said, "You are not the right man," and he was turned away at the gate. Here's the guards. There's this guy and that lady, and there's two lions. Closer to the year's end, the second son went off to claim the princess and her kingdom. And when he came to the golden road, his horse had just set one foot upon it. He said, "It would be a thousand pities for a horse to tread on a road as beautiful as this." And he rode his horse along the left side of the road. And when he reached the castle, the guards said to him, "You are not the right man," and he too was turned away. At exactly the year's end, the youngest son decided to leave the forest.
What was that?
Oh, that's a little kid. So this youngest son has been living in the forest the whole time. He's in hiding. And his sorrows, so he's going to decide to leave the forest and his sorrows behind him and go to his princess. He rode along, thinking only of her, wishing only to be with her. And so, when he came to the road, he did not notice it was made of gold. He rode quickly right up to the center of its shining surface, straight to the princess's castle. When the guards saw this, they said to him, "You are the right man," and they opened the gates wide to allow him to enter. The princess greeted him joyfully, "You are my savior and the lord of my kingdom." And they were married with great celebration and much rejoicing throughout the land. Then the princess told the prince that his father had forgiven him and wanted him to come back home. With happiness in his heart, the prince returned to his father. He told the king how his brothers had tricked him and forced him to remain silent. The king wanted to punish his two sons, but by that time they had sailed away over the sea. They never came back as long as they lived. And there, I guess they're on that ship there. And there, right there, is the dwarf looking out over the sea. And there's the king and the youngest son reuniting. And there's his. And there, right there, is a picture of them in the back cover. And they're walking down the beach, hand in hand. The prince and the princess. The end.